If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We are live.
1, 2, 3, 4.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to West by Pod, a podcast about WVU football, the Big 12 Conference, and the first time in 11 years, a new NCAA football game. I'm Joel Bracken. I'm at WV Stats Guy. Joined as always by Jordan Pinto. He's at Game Day Shorts. We're recording on July 10th. We are like less than a week away, or around a week away, from a new college football game, which is very exciting. I think Jordan and I are both big fans of the program. We're also going to talk some Kansas today, but we're going to open with the NCAA game because lots of exciting stuff has come out. Have you been tracking every day the new information they dropped to us, Jordan?
Absolutely. Dialing it up at 11 a.m. sharp. That's when they've been doing all the content releases. Very, very encouraging stuff. Very encouraging stuff so far. They even piqued my interest with Ultimate Team. You know, I got the deluxe edition, so I think I can play either Monday afternoon or Tuesday.
I think Monday.
And you get some Ultimate Team points with that. So, you know, I'm not gonna spend a dollar on it, but I'm gonna use the points I already have and just see what kind of a team that gets me. And if it looks good, maybe I'll grind it out. But yeah, man, overall really good. I think, you know, the one gripe is we didn't get more guys in the top 100. You know, I'm always going to be a little upset about that. Like, they have the dude from Liberty, the two dudes from Liberty rated higher than, you know, Garrett Green, Jaheim White. I don't get it. But you know, overall, yeah, I mean, I've seen nothing to put a damper on my excitement. I'm full systems go. Probably going to take Tuesday off and see if we can't get that first natty under the belt before I go back to work on Wednesday.
Wrap a quick season up on the day. I feel that. No, I'm a big fan of the series. I read the 85-page manifesto that was the Dynasty deep dive. I did not have a current gen system, but it came in the mail today. So I'm pumped. I'm ready to get some rebuild dynasties going and you know, mix it up with the current WVU team. So yeah, Wyatt Milam was the only guy in the top 100, right?
Yeah, he was rated a 90. I think he was the 82nd best. I liked how they did it. They capped it, like, the best players in the country, I think, were like 95, 96. And then it kind of dropped down, and there were a lot of dudes between like 90 and 92.
Yeah.
Which, like, I think is how it should be. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of what 2K does. It's kind of what FIFA does. I would expect our guys, if Garrett Green's not above an 88, I'm going to riot, because they've made a big thing about, oh, you know, we had PFF come and help us with what these ratings should be. Garrett Green would grade it out at a 91 last year, you know, so yeah. Like, give me a fucking break. But I expect, you know, I expect him to be in the very high 80s, if not a 90, maybe just a 90 who didn't make the cut. You know, I expect we'll have a handful of guys between 85, 88, and then a whole lot between like 77 and 84. You know, because but that's how it should be. That's how it should be. That's like what the average player, I would say, is. That's the best way to make it feel like the best players are actually the best players. So yeah, no, I'm pumped. I wish they would have released the whole roster today. It was just the top 100, which is a little disappointing. But
I was sent, I don't know, I guess this is from Ultimate Team. I was sent the Tavon Austin and also the Geno Smith, which are, you know, just like the, I think they're having some former players will be in the Ultimate Team. Yep. Tavon Austin's card, he's an 84 overall, 86 speed, 86 agility, which if Tavon Austin's an 86 agility, I don't know what a 99 looks like.
But. Nah, I think those are just the generic, like, here's what the cards look like, you know, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Tavon and Geno would both be in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of the thing, right? Like, that's what you're hoping to pull with your, you know, you're hoping to pull like a Geno, a Tavon, a Stephen Bailey, Steve Slayton, a Pat White, and then you can just kind of build your team around that. That will probably determine how much I play Ultimate Team if I get in a nice pool like that kind of early in the cycle here. But
yeah, you know. No, I feel it. I've never been big in the Ultimate Team stuff, and the, like, I played some FIFA and 2K a little bit, I've tried it, but it's never really stuck. I do like the Dynasty stuff. I'm sure I'll try Road to Glory as well. But dude, I'm excited. It's been a long time. Played 14 for many, many years. So, just really cool to see it come in. I'm so excited to load one up in Milan Puskar with all the new renovations. It's going to it's going to be special. So I'm super pumped about it.
They better fix the lighting. The lighting in the one WVU clip that I've seen is like where the sun would be if it was like 8 a.m. So hopefully that was just kind of an early build of the game.
Yeah.
Worth mentioning, Mike, head honcho at Smoking Musket has said that he's going to set up a Musket online dynasty.
Ooh.
So, you know, if you're already in the Discord, you're probably aware of that. If you're just a listener, but you play the game, pop in the Discord to make sure you can get all the deets on that. We'll get a little Musket online dynasty going, and you know, just kind of see where everybody is. Maybe get a little bragging rights. Yeah. You know, I used to be able to play a little bit of ball back in the day. I don't know if I still got. I haven't played a football game since the last NCAA. So,
yeah,
gonna be rusty, but we'll see.
We'll have to get some cross-platform stuff, because I know we can't do, I'm Xbox, you're PlayStation. I know we can't Dynasty together. We'll definitely, maybe we'll get a, maybe we'll like get a special show for a showdown or something like that. I don't know. We'll figure
Could
something out.
Could be fun. You probably smoke me, but that's okay.
I don't know, man. We'll have to see. I haven't played, same as you, I haven't played like a current gen, like Madden and all that. It looks so different than the old games. And I think especially like passing and stuff's going to be similar to the newer games. So, we'll see, but very pumped to dig into that.
Yep.
Okay. So otherwise, we're keeping the summer series deep dives rolling here. We did our homework, so you can get the quick facts and things you need to know. So today we're starting into the Big 12 season. Once again, if you haven't been listening along, but we go through each team West Virginia's playing. We're doing a deep dive, so just state of the program, who you need to know, what you need to know, and just sort of looking at these programs as a whole with the perspective of we're looking at them in like June, July, August, and these things are subject to change. But this gives us like a nice, I feel like doing our homework in the summer gives us a good like launch point during the season to, okay, let's see midway through the season, what did I think of them back in the summer versus now? So today we're doing Kansas. Anything else we need to touch on before we get into the Jayhawks?
Nah, man. Set the scene. It's all you. Floor is yours.
Okay, cool. All right. So Kansas Jayhawks. 2023 campaign, pretty darn good for them. 9-4, 5-4 in the conference. They had a big win, beat number 6 Oklahoma. And dude, they're riding high. Their trajectory is upward. it's been two seasons. The last two seasons have been so different than what we've seen since 2008. They did not have a winning. They didn't win more than five games since 2008 until the last 2 years. Last year they got six. I think they were 6-7, and then last year now 9-4. Yeah, and a lot of that is Lance Leopold, just program builder coming in, really like changing everything about the way people perceive Kansas football. It was a free win. It was one of those, they're power five, but not really. They had lost to FCS schools a lot of the time. And yeah, that perspective has changed. So the expectation coming into this season is the highest it's been for a long, long time for them. Kind of weird last year with Jalen Daniels getting hurt, but he's back. They're picked like third-ish to win the conference, third by Vegas standards, just to Utah and Kansas State. And the Big 12 media poll came out here in the last week. They were fourth in that. So, yeah, the Kansas Jayhawks are to be respected now is what we are being told. Yeah, so what has been your perspective on the Jayhawks, just kind of giving them a once-over and where they're at as a whole?
Yeah, the rebuild is right on schedule here. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you said it last year. They got beat pretty good by Texas, beat Oklahoma with Bean. Godspeed, you know, fuck off Oklahoma. Sent them packing with a little L. But you know, I think this was just a very competitive and a very fun team, regardless of who was playing quarterback. Average scoring margin of 35-27 last year. And aside from the Texas game, nothing but one score losses, right? So even when they, you know, in the other three games that they lost, they were still very competitive. I think respect is something that's earned over a period of time. You know, I don't think that they had it after the 6-7. The 6-7 was fun. I think especially, did they start 6-0 or they started 5-0?
At least 5-0, yeah.
Yeah, they started 5-0. But yeah, I mean, 9-4 is a respectable record, regardless, and yeah, they have earned the right to feel good about themselves. I think, especially with regards to the polls, you know, the Vegas thing of the Vegas thing and the preseason media poll is, we'll get into their schedule, but it's a very favorable schedule, right? You know, I don't think there are many games where they will not be favored. Yep. You know, if we're being honest about it. And so they have as good of a chance as anybody outside of Kansas State and Utah of crashing the party, making it to the Big 12 championship game. And yeah, I think, you know, you said it all starts with the offense, starts with the quarterback. This has been a very, very, very good offense for the last 2 years. One big change that we'll mention, but overall, yeah, the vibes are earned. The vibes are good.
Yeah, yeah, they cashed in even with the stadium renovations while they were, you know, kind of riding high recently. So they're going to upgrade that stadium, which I think was needed for a Power Five stadium. It doesn't look like one. So yeah, I mean, I think this is an ideal rebuild. So you know, one big change, I guess, if we're going to talk coaches. Offensive coordinator change, I think, is significant and worth mentioning. Yeah. It is, they lose a really good guy. Andy Ketelnicki goes to Penn State, which we talked about him a little bit in the Penn State deep dive a couple weeks back. Jeff Grimes comes over from Baylor, and this is going to be his first year with Kansas, but this guy has been around a lot of success, especially on the offensive end. He was, you know, a part of developing Zach Wilson at BYU. I don't remember if he won the Heisman. He definitely was one of the finalists that year. He also was a part of that Baylor 12-2 season just a couple years ago, I think. Really has been a part of some winning teams and some teams that have like put up some numbers on offense. So Grimes will be an interesting change for the offensive side. Defensive side, keeping it consistent. Brian Borland, this will be his fourth season in that position. And yeah, the defense has gotten better. The defense has improved. I mean, like I said, this team was sort of a cakewalk. This was a automatic W on your schedule unless you were named Texas. So yeah, I think the defense has done its job. But yeah, everything really starts with the offense with this team.
Yeah, Grimes, you know, I think if we're being objective, it's a downgrade from what Kelenicki has been. You know, I think we talked enough on Penn State about the esteem that I hold him in. But yeah, I think from an identity perspective, I don't think he's as creative as Kelenicki, but identity perspective, he fits kind of what they've been. Yeah, I think they've coined the term the reliably violent offense. And so it's, you know, it's kind of a relatively small number of plays, but a ton of motion, ton of misdirection, and a ton of different formations to kind of get them into those looks. A little bit of play action. I think about 30, about a third of the time that they pass the ball, there'll be some sort of a play action involved. But yeah, you know, I think he fits what they want to do. I don't think he'll be as good as Kelenicki. I'll be interested to see, especially like the option quarterback option stuff with Daniels and Bean over the last couple of years has played a huge role in their success, especially running the ball. I think they were the second best rushing attack in the country last year, according to BetaRank. It'll be interesting to see if that kind of stuff is still as big of a piece of the offense as it has been. He didn't do as much of that stuff, obviously, at BYU and Baylor. You know, was that because he had Zach Wilson and Tyler Shough? Now that he has Jalen Daniels, he'll kind of lean into that more. I think some of the stories, some of the stuff out of Kansas, if you read some of their beat reporter stuff over the summer, says that he is going to lean into that, but it's not something he's done. So I don't know if he'll be as successful. But yeah, I mean, you got to start when you talk about the offense, you got to start with Jalen Daniels, who somehow it's his fifth year in the program. It feels like, just because he's missed so many games that felt high to me. I would have guessed that he was like a junior, but he's actually a fifth year senior. And when he's played, he's been really, really good. Last year through three games, he got hurt in the third game, I think against BYU actually. But yep. 56 to 75, so 75% completions, 700 yards, 9.3 yards per attempt, 10.2 ADOT, 5-1 touchdown interception ratio. Doesn't turn the ball over. Didn't hit a ton of big plays last year. I think only a 3.8% big time throw rate, but makes really good decisions with the ball, especially when he's outside of the pocket. You know, I think he is one of the best in the country of I'm going to draw the defense to me and just kind of dump it to somebody over their head for a big gain. Obviously a great athlete. I think his numbers have regressed a bit as a runner from his first couple years. I think just with the injuries, maybe not as reckless as he was early, for good reason. He only had 4.3 yards per carry last year, but still a super effective ball carrier. You know, I mean, if you put him one-on-one in space with just about any defender, I think, Kansas fans, the objective fan would back him in that situation. Yeah, just a really good player. The only red flag, is the injury history. He's missed 14 of 26 games the last 2 years. Has never played more than 430 snaps in a season. No. How big of a role does the option play in the offense this year? I wouldn't be surprised to see him take a small step back in the design running game this year, just in the interest of self-preservation. But that's probably not the worst thing because. You know, they don't have a Jason Bean sitting behind him this year. I think the backup is a true freshman who is highly, highly regarded, admittedly. But, you're not bringing in a Jason Bean who is really, kind of a 1B to Daniels 1A. But, yeah, really, really good player.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you pretty much covered Jalen Daniels. I mean, you definitely knew who he was if you watched two seasons ago. He really single-handedly felt like he transformed the Kansas program, or he was the face, I feel like, of the transformation. Coming into last season, he was the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year preseason. So, he is not that this year. He is not the preseason Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year, but that's probably just because of injuries. He's coming back. Dual threat, I have in my notes, he can put the team on his back, which is kind of funny because his injury last year was to his back. So he, kept him out for a long time. He's missed a lot of games, and yeah, that's the biggest negative. But if you're going to play with him on NCAA, he is a 90 overall. Kansas, of all teams, had three players in the top 100 that they released. So,
well, all three of those guys deserve it. I can't take too much of an issue with that.
Yeah. So Jalen Daniels, when he plays, he's awesome. Keeping him on the field, I think, is the biggest key to this offense. So maybe that does mean limiting the run a little bit or keeping him safe. So I think that's a good transition to Devin Neal, to the running back room. Devin Neal is your other one of your other players for Kansas, who is a 92 overall in the NCAA game. PFF grade last year was 85, which is very high. I was just looking at his numbers because I feel like he's also a guy who feels like he's been there forever. I think assuming he has the same kind of season he's had like the last three, to break 4,000 yards rushing. There's less than 140 guys who've ever done that, which I get that's a long list, but just kind of like showing you the longevity and like consistently putting up numbers. Whereas like half of those years, Kansas was still like winning two games a season. Like this guy was still putting up the numbers. The 1-2 combo of Daniels and Neal, that's, you know, those are your impact players immediately that you can see on this offense. I mean, I think that's the two guys everyone's going to circle. Daniel Heischel Jr. also in the backfield. When he got touches last year, he was pretty effective. I think he graded out in the 79-ish range PFF. You look at the offense, you look at the quarterback and the running back position. Assuming they stay healthy, I mean, these are maybe the best in the conference of like the 1-2 of those positions. Definitely in the top three, I think. So, this is a pretty potent bunch.
It's a really good backfield. I know some old golden blue clad young men who may who may have something to say about who's the best. But
I sure
you said it about Heischel, man. The thing that jumped out to me about Heischel, 45 missed tackles forced and just 117 carries, which is, it's like one every three carries. That's a pretty good rate. He's not as explosive as Neal is, but he's a hard motherfucker to get down. Backfield's great. Pass catchers have been great the last few years. They have six of their top seven targets back. Out wide, Lawrence Arnold, Luke Grimm, Quentin Skinner, all seniors, all have been very productive the last few years. They spread it to them pretty evenly. I think they had 48, 45, and 44 targets last year, respectively, and all graded out between 74.5 and 76.5. So, super productive receivers. Tight end, this is the one target that they lose is Mason Fairchild. But they bring back Jared Casey.
Everyone's favorite.
Who is Casey, he's a multi-year contributor. He's a guy who's played for them a lot over the last couple of years. I don't think that he's quite the downfield target that Fairchild was. So it'll be interesting to see if they have somebody else on the roster. I know they got a transfer from Iowa State, Deshaun Hanukkah, who didn't play last year but was good in 2022, who maybe will be more of the receiving threat. Casey's more of like an H-back blocking, slide out of the backfield type of guy, as opposed to Fairchild was a guy who would run routes down the field, had a full route tree, could make plays down the field. So be interesting to see if that changes things at all for them. But yeah, I mean, when you look at the skill positions, there's no weaknesses. Really good backfield, really good pass catchers. What are your thoughts on the line?
Yeah, I'm just I the receiving room I do think was like a very like continuous group. Like they're bringing back everybody they need. The only thing I have in my notes here is that it's not a quarterback change, but all the numbers from last year were a different quarterback throwing. It's like you look at the skill positions and everyone's back, though Jalen Daniels was not the guy last year. So that'll just be an interesting wrkle. And also, I just can't believe Jared Casey's also still there. It feels like he caught that touchdown or two-point, I forget which, against Texas
a long time ago.
I think if you're going to find a soft spot in this offense, it seems like it's the line. I have, just from my notes, two returning starters of the five. One of the projected starters is a transfer from Tiffin University, which is not known for its football prowess. And just looking across, like some not great experience, and some, like I said, just two of the five guys from last year who got significant snaps. So for a team that, you know, wants to rely on probably running the ball in some situations, like they have the backfield to run it, you need guys to block for them. So potential soft spot. I just have sus question mark in my nuts, in my notes. Like, this is a, we'll see. But I think if you were looking across all the position groups, this is the weakest on the offense.
Yeah, you know, I think it does help. So the two guys coming back are pretty good. Michael Ford Jr. Was a preseason first team all conference selection. He is the second highest graded returning guard in the Big 12. And then Bryce Cabledew, who is not a preseason selection, but was the fifth highest returning tackle in the conference. And then they actually have another guy, another guard, Kobe Baines, who was not a starter but played a lot for him, who is the seventh highest graded returning guard. But yeah, I think center is a question mark. You mentioned the guy from Tiffin, Shane Bumgardner. So, you know, is he a bum or what? I did see they got a transfer from Texas A&M, Bryce Foster, who was a highly regarded player coming out of high school. I think he was a two-year starter at Texas A&M, but was, you know, didn't perform super well. So it'll be interesting to see, I guess, who wins that center battle. Is it going to be Bumgardner? Is it going to be a Foster? But then at the other tackle, redshirt freshman guy who has not played for them at all. So, you know, that's probably not ideal for Jalen Daniels' long-term well-being. But it'll be interesting. And, you know, I think this is another area where we'll get a really good feel for if and how much of a downgrade Grimes is from Kotelnicki. Because I think one of the things that Kotelnicki was awesome at is just the nature of the offense that he ran kind of created lanes in and of itself, right? It's kind of like how the Rich Rod stuff that we did back in the day where, there was so much stuff that you had to worry about. I mean, we talked about the pass catchers. They had multiple running backs. Both of their quarterbacks could run. You know, if you step in the wrong lane at the snap and they pick up 10 yards, right? So be interesting to see if they still kind of have that gash ability. I'm going to coin that term.
I like that.
But yeah, you know, I think that you kind of nailed it. That's the one spot where you can kind of poke holes in this offense. But overall, man, they got a lot of stuff back. And you know, I think should be again one of the better groups in the country, certainly in the conference, barring an injury to Daniels or a significant step back up front.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think when you think about this team and when I think about Kansas over the last 2 years, it has been an offensive explosion. They're going to put up points. They're going to move the ball. You know, this is what's going to propel the team forward. The defense, you know, can the defense do enough to put them in a position in October or into November that they're going to be battling to get to the conference championship? So last year, just for comparison, they were beta ranked 7th in offense. They were 51st in defense. And remember, the beta rank is adjusted for opponents. So, you know, there's only 60 power schools. 51st in defense is not great. So I would say this is like a below average power four. Sorry, I put it in the swear jar there. defense coming from last year. Also, I think I forgot to mention, as a program, Kansas is 82nd in returning production, so a little under the halfway mark there. So flipping to the defense, last year, just, you know, against the run, they were 46th beta rank. Against the pass, they were 61st. It's a little surprising to me just looking at sort of the breakdown of talent maybe on their defense, because it seems like they have a lot more talent in the secondary. Two guys... and this is the third guy who was in the top 100 NCAA guys, Kobe Bryant in the defensive backs. He was an all Big 12 guy in the preseason this year, and also Melo Dodson. So those two Big 12 preseason awards on the defense go to the defensive backs. But last year, the data would tell you that they were actually better against the run than the pass. So that's sort of a head scratcher for me. I guess we want to start at the D-line. You have strong thoughts on the D-line. I did see a transfer from North Dakota State. I have that guy down, Javier Darrett. I didn't look up any tape on him. You have any thoughts on him or anybody else on the D-line?
Yeah, my note on him, so he was a two-year starter, three-year contributor, played well at North Dakota State, you know, was a good player. But my note is he's listed as an interior defensive lineman. and he's only 6'2", 280. So possibly concerning, you know, maybe some concerns about his size stepping up from the FCS to the FBS level, and especially to the Power Four level. But yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned the 82nd returning production. We just talked about all the dudes they have back on offense. So, you know, pretty easy to figure out where they're losing guys, and it's on the defensive side of the ball. You know, I think inside, if you start up front, they lose Devin Phillips and Gage Keys, 20 combined pressures from the inside of their offensive line or defensive line, which is pretty good production for an interior defensive lineman. And then on the edge, they lose three of their top four guys. They lose Austin Booker is the big one. He was a he got drafted. He was a fifth round pick by the Bears, but had 38 pressures and 9 sacks last year. Then they lose Hayden Hatcher, who had 10 pressures and a sack. He was kind of a more of a contributor role. He wasn't a starter, but he was a good player for him. And then same thing with Patrick Joyner, who had 6 pressures and 2 sacks. So, you know, you're losing three of your top four by snaps, and you're losing some good contributors. And so, you know, I think the question for them is going to be, they have bodies, but can those dudes step up and be effective depth pieces? You know, I think the starters will be okay. Inside, I think it'll be DJ Withers and Tommy Dunn, who both played a good bit last year, weren't starters, but played okay. Dunn especially graded out a 64.4, which is, you know, above average, a solid starter grade. Withers was a little bit lower, you know, the other two guys, Caleb Taylor graded a 54, Keenan Caldwell graded a 56.2. You know, I think the big piece they're bringing back up front is Jerome Robinson. Had 29 pressures and 4 sacks last season, but struggled a bit against the run. And then the only other guys they have at edge, you know, Dylan Brooks, Dean Miller, didn't even combine for 100 snaps between them last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they got lots of bodies, but they lose some pop. So, you know, I think they'll be wondering, you know, can these guys take steps forward? Like you said, they were pretty good against, or they were better against the run than against the pass last year. I think the defensive line played a big role in that. I think they're two highest rated recruits. Let me pull the names here. Deshaun Warner was a 96 rated 4-star edge. Dacus Brinkley, a 90 rated 4-star edge. But both of those guys are kind of small. You know, I'm curious to see, like, have they put on enough weight to be able to contribute this year? Like, are those guys going to be ready to step in? Yeah, I don't know. The defensive line, I don't think it'll be as good as it was last year. This is one of those things that they've done a good job recruiting. Leipold, you know, the rebuild has been real. They're definitely in a better spot roster wise than they were a couple years back. But can they replace all the dudes that they lost? You know, I mean, you lose 5 like major players up front, and you know, you play maybe 8 or 9, 10. I don't know. I mean, we're gonna see how good of a job they've done recruiting, how much development they can do. I think. You know, when you move to the back half of this defense, there are also some losses, but I think that's kind of where the strength is going to lie. What do you you want to take a cut at the linebackers here?
Yeah. So yeah, your projected linebackers are Barry Hill, Wheeler, and I guess in the Hawk position they got Gilliam. So you know, your top snap guy last year was Rich Miller. He's gone. Didn't grade out too well last year. Then you have Craig Young and JB Brown. So your 3 highest snap linebackers are not returning. So that's sort of a concern for me. My notes here, I have that Wheeler, he only played 197 snaps last year. He was a 67.7. So that's a decent starter grade, just not really on the volume that you're looking for. Barry Hill, 271 snaps. He was a 33. This is the lowest graded player on their defense. And he actually took, you know, somewhat significant snaps. So linebacking core just kind of looking like the weakest portion of this defense. Gilliam only took 125 snaps. He was a 58 overall grade. So you have some guys who you know, played some minutes. All 3 of these guys were in rotation last year. But you lose your top 3 snap guys at the positions? And, you know, that's always just going to take some time to sort of fill those gaps. Yeah, so I think the linebacking core is definitely a little weak. You know, but if you move to the secondary, I mentioned it, their two starting cornerbacks are preseason All Big 12. And I think we mentioned in Penn State, Penn State's like linebacker you. Is Kansas have a thing with defensive backs? Because there are like lots of good defensive backs in the league who are Kansas guys. Like, I think Chris Harris Jr., Aqib Talib. You got two All Big 12 selections to start the season for Kansas. I just wonder that's like a little identity they have. Those two are Kobe Bryant, Melo Dodson. Also, Marvin Grant graded out really well as a safety last year. So I definitely think that the defensive backs are going to be the strength of this defense overall. What do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, I think they better pray that none of those guys get hurt. Because I like very good players at the first line, absolutely nothing behind them. I think you look at Kobe, C-O-B-E-E, Bryant. Bryant and Dotson, I think you're right. I mean, that's probably somehow it's the premier cornerback duo in the conference. They're both really, really good players. They've both been really, really good players. You know, they've kind of – I mean, you know, I've watched – honestly, I've probably watched as much Kansas as anybody outside of West Virginia in the conference. It feels like those dudes are always making plays. You know, they pop off the screen. People throw at them. They break it up. But looking behind them, Brian Dilworth, Demarius McGee, like, you know, these are not names we're familiar with. Brian Dotson both played like 700 snaps last year. I think Dotson was just a shade under. Bryant was 744. So, you know, when that's happening, like, there's just not an opportunity to develop too much depth behind him, right? Grant, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with him. He was good last year. I think so they lose Kenny Logan, was a multiple time all conference selection for them, was basically their only good player for a couple years. 4-year starter. He's finally gone. Grant will step into that role. I think my concern in the back end and really with this defense as a whole is, you know, outside of the first like wave of dudes, there's just nothing proven, right? You're hoping guys take step forward. You're hoping that guys, when they get their time in the spotlight, are going to step up and perform. I was looking at this on PFF. They only have 14 dudes back who played 100 plus snaps last year on defense, and only six of those guys graded out of the 65 or higher. So, you know, it's kind of outside of the corners, outside of Marvin Grant, there's really just not a whole lot of proven like playmakers here. So I don't know. I mean, I think we talked about the defense has been improved. The defense has definitely been the complementary piece to the offense. And in that, if the defense plays well, they generally win because the offense has been pretty reliable. The context there, like you said, still kind of a bottom quarter group at the Power Four level. So like, can they maintain that again, or do they take like a little mini step back to like, you know, maybe just outside of what you would expect that Power Four, like the 70s or something? If they do, then I don't know. They're really going to need the offense to put up some numbers.
I think the way this team wins is a lot of shootout kind of games. Like, I think first to 50 kind of games.
For sure. For sure.
But if the defense does enough, I mean, you know, I think this team could end up in the conversation, especially in conference play coming down the stretch. Their out-of-conference schedule is pretty soft, I think. They play Lindenwood, an FCS team. They travel to Illinois, and then they play UNLV, who they just played UNLV in the Guaranteed Rate Bowl to end the season. So kind of a strange – they play a team they played in a bowl game just a couple months back. So that's their out-of-conference. And then their first conference game is coming to Morgantown. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
So coming to Morgantown, then they have TCU at Arizona State, Houston, K-State, Iowa State, BYU, Colorado, Baylor. When I look at their schedule, I'm thinking, well, you dodged Arizona. That's one. You have Kansas State on the schedule.
Dodge Utah.
Yeah. So your two
dodge
teams UTF, that are
dodge. Oh no, they got Iowa State. But yeah.
And you're kind of, you know, grouping of who are the top teams likely in the conference. Oklahoma State is one of them. They dodge them. Utah is one of them. They dodge them. you know, they Arizona can be frisky with that might be a fun game if we see an Arizona Kansas game somehow. That some offense flying there, but yeah, I mean, I think they have a path. I think this team could it's going to be, like you said, going to be favored in most of their games. So that's a new thing for Kansas football, but probably going to be true this year.
Yeah, I think my favorite thing about the schedule is they truly alternate home and away. They're home Lindenwood, away in Illinois, and then they just kind of alternate home and away.
Yeah,
for every week for the entire season. But yeah, no, I mean, like you're looking at this, like, so WVU, TCU, Kansas State, Iowa State are tough. You know, I would say those are ones that you wouldn't say they're going to be favored in. Excuse me. I think, sorry, those are tough. But like the rest of them, yeah, it's the bottom half of the conference. I was saying, I mean, the only two games they're not favored, maybe at us and at Kansas State.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I mean, when you're talking about this team as like, you know, maybe a decent bet to make it to the conference championship game, I mean, shit, if everybody stays healthy, they're better than, not, you know, 9 or 10 of the teams on their schedule. So,
I mean, so they were fourth in the media poll and they dodge 1 and 3. Yeah. So that helps.
It helps. They dodge 1, 3, they dodge 5, 6. Yeah. I mean, they dodge Texas Tech, who's another, I mean, you know, one of the people in that second tier pack that I think, you know, is literally like 7 teams, but yeah, they got thrown a nice little, I would trade them for sure.
Yeah. All right. You want to do some climb index?
Yeah, let's do the climb index.
All right. So climb index is our quick sum up of the team. So climb is an acronym, cohesion, losses, infusion, menu, and the fun one, benefactor, where we pick a brand for the team that we think represents them. So I'll start. Cohesion. I gave them a 3.5 out of 5. I think you keep a lot of your skill position stuff. You keep a lot of your offensive continuity. But the defense, I think you lose a lot of cohesion there. I'm kind of, you know, that one hurts you. I think other than the defensive backs, don't have a lot.
Yeah, and so we don't, we haven't been sharing our ratings ahead of time. But yeah, I had 3.5 as well. All the reasons you mentioned, plus, you know, you lose Kotelnicki, which I think is a big, you know, it's a big loss. That's been a big piece of who they've been, a big reason why they've been so fun to watch, why they've scored so many points. So yeah, 3.5 out of 5 for me.
All right.
What about losses for you?
I said 2 out of 5, and maybe upon reading it, I might tick high. I have Kenny Logan. And then the Bean is kind of, Jason Bean one's sort of interesting because is Jalen Daniels actually better than Bean? I don't know. Bean kind of balled out last year.
Bean's good.
Yeah. So I have him a 2 out of 5 on losses.
Yeah, I actually did. I did too. Yeah. So losses, Kotelnicki. They lose their O-line coach, Scott Fuchs, to the NFL. Lose their defensive back coach, Jordan Peterson. Not that Jordan Peterson, but a cool Jordan Peterson who develops good defensive backs to Texas A&M. And then they had 7 dudes who are on NFL rosters this year, or who have signed NFL contracts, I guess I should say. Dominic Puny, offensive lineman, got drafted 3rd-round pick to San Francisco. I already mentioned Booker was a pick in the 5th round to Chicago. Then Jason Bean and Craig Young signed undrafted free agent deals with Indianapolis. Kenny Logan, undrafted, to the Rams. Mike Nowitzki, undrafted, to Seattle. And Mason Fairchild has earned an invite to the Bills camp. So yeah, I mean, you know, maybe not a huge number. I mean, we talked about Penn State had 8 guys get drafted. Period. Right. But, you know, for a program like Kansas, who is just kind of in their, maybe their, you know, 3rd real year of being a real program, like, that's a big hit. You know, it's hard to replace that kind of depth. There's a lot of good players for them who they're going to have to find somebody to step up and fill the shoes there. So I said 2.
Yeah. All right. Infusion. I gave him a 3. New offensive coordinator. We can debate if it's an upgrade, downgrade, or side grade, but it's something new. And then I'm kind of counting Jalen Daniels back in. He is an infusion to what they really had last year because he didn't really contribute, at least in any of the conference games. So I gave him a 3 out of 5. I think, you know, they're getting some freshness, some change ups with the newish quarterback and offensive coordinator.
Yeah, I was at a 3 as well. I was surprised. They finished with the 43rd or the 42nd overall recruiting class last year. 43rd of just high school composite, and then the 52nd rated transfer. And I thought that was a pretty good haul for them. You know, I already mentioned the two edge dudes out of high school, both 4 stars. You know, you get the interior offensive lineman, Bryce Foster from Texas A&M, who I would imagine will be competing for the center job since they kind of have two fairly well-established guards. And then yeah, I think we mentioned Derrett from North Dakota State. They got another edge from Youngstown State who was pretty good, and a free safety from Utah State who I don't think is going to start for them, but is on the 2 deep who played really well last year as a freshman. So, you know, nothing super splashy, but some solid dudes that they brought in. And then, yeah, actually I like the point about Daniels, right? I mean, you know, it's like a new signing. That's what people always say. You know, I follow soccer pretty closely. And when you have a guy out who comes back, it's like, oh, it's like a new signing. Yeah, it's great. So, yeah, infusion 3 out of 5.
Yeah. Now he's quite the guy to throw into an offense that was already really good last year.
You could do worse. You could do worse. Yeah.
So the menu, so what they got for a schedule, I gave him a 4 out of 5. I think this is a really favorable schedule for them. I mean, I think we kind of covered this, but, you know, they're going to be favored in a lot of games, and they get to dodge some of the big dogs in the conference. So I don't think you can ask for a better schedule in a conference like the Big 12.
Yeah, I said five. I mean, this is maybe the best schedule in the conference. I don't know. I mean, maybe it is. I haven't looked at all of them yet, but it's the best one I've seen so far. So,
yep. And then the benefactor, I know we talked about this one, kind of trying to figure a funny one out for them. I think we maybe both just agreed on the same one of just NCAA football. This is when you, like, we've all probably done this dynasty where you take over the worst Power 5 team who just fired their coach, and you hope to rebuild them up, and you probably focus on getting skill positions first. So I feel like you look at this team, you're like, wow, they got some dudes at quarterback and running back, some good corners. That's kind of feel like how I would recruit. And you know, you're 3 years into the rebuild, and you're you know, shooting for a conference championship and a very realistic chance at making the college football playoff. Like, that's totally in play. That's what is a play for everybody in the conference. Now it is a viable path. It's not decided by somebody in a conference room. There is a, you know, set in stone way to do it, and they have as good a shot as like 4 or 5 other teams, I think, coming into the season. So
just absolutely fire rebuild job here by Lance Leipold. You know, I think they could have done better with the fake coach's name. You know, it kind of sounds like a fake name, but NCAA football is a really good one. For me, I was kind of trying to think, like, what is like an established product where it's like they've been really good at one thing for a long time, and then they're trying to kind of branch out into something new, and they're kind of reasonably successful at it. Obviously, football and basketball with Kansas being the thing there. Couldn't really think of anything. So then I was like thinking about it, and I was like, you know, the rebuild, it's kind of like house flipping, right? So my benefactor for Kansas is Masters of Flip, the house flipping TV show. Because Leipold, I mean, he took on a real fixer upper here. You know, he bought a dilapidated, 3,000 square foot house for $150,000 at the auction 4 years ago. And he's about to sell this motherfucker for like $700,000.
Oh, yeah. You know,
just put a little bit of time, put a little elbow grease, little financial investment. And, you know, I don't know when he's going to leave, if he's going to leave. But if and when he does, he is going to have left this thing in a much better place than, than where it was when he found it. So Masters of Flip for me.
Dude, this is a team that Les Miles couldn't turn around. I mean, yeah. Like, there are some big names have come through Kansas and have just, like, stonewalled, like, win two games. So, yeah, I mean, all the praise for him for getting this thing right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so that's the Jayhawks. Yeah, so you can get us on smokingmusket.com. We're on Twitter at WestBiPod with underscores. I'm at WV Stats Guy. He's at Game Day Shorts. Make sure you're in the Discord as we approach the season, as we approach the Olympics. I don't know. Any sports things you like to watch? We're going to be talking NCAA Euro Cup.
Online Dynasty.
Of course, NCAA Dynasty. I don't know if you've been watching Euro Cup. We only got one game left in that one, but it's coming home.
The semis have
been fantastic. Of course I did. That was a good one.
Ollie Watkins, baby. It's my dog.
Yeah, the both semifinal games were incredible, honestly. Yeah. So, but any sports or whatever hangout stuff, Smoky Musket Discord is a good place to be. Other than that, thank you for listening as always, and we'll catch you in the next one, breaking down Oklahoma State.
All righty. Take care, gang.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.